I think that the value proposition comes in my opinion, when you've got these larger companies that have, you know, 200 units and they're charging 22 to 25%. And then these hosts or these owners are getting frustrated because one, they don't have good communication.
Welcome to the Collecting Keys Podcast, the show where you'll learn how to use real estate to create massive income, not just passive income. Real estate doesn't have to be a get-rich-slow game. Listen to the country's top real estate operators, and you'll have all the tools you need to replace your W-2 income and go beyond in under 12 months. Ready to take things to the next level? Let's jump in with our hosts, Mike DeHaan and Dan Austin, for today's episode of the Collecting Keys Podcast.
What's going on, guys? On today's episode of the Collecting Keys Real Estate Investing Podcast, we have Caleb Drake, who is a real estate entrepreneur who, I guess, lives in the Pensacola area, does some business down there. He flips and rents properties in the Midwest. He has like a pretty big realtor team, and he is an all-around, just like, I don't know, all-inclusive real estate entrepreneur. But for the purpose of this show, we actually spend a ton of time talking about short-term property management and that business that he has built there, which is a, you know, pretty interesting conversation, because if you guys have listened to us at all, you know how Dan and I feel about short-term rentals in general. But I will say, Pensacola, Florida is probably one of the few markets where I'm like,
short-term mecca.
Absolutely. It's like the whole city's built to be a short-term rental. Have you ever been there?
Yes. The whole part of state is built to be short-term rentals. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it was fascinating too, just hearing he's another guy that has approached it. And he even said that he started out with real estate as a hobby, and then he turned it and started focusing it on business. He talks about implementing traction. And those are the folks to really listen to when you're hearing them on podcasts. Get outside of the deals and like the big wins and all this stuff and listen to the business that they're operating. And that's what you want to be able to replicate.
Yep, definitely. You know, and he has a lot going on. I think that he probably, if you have any like interest in any part of like real estate in general, this guy probably has like some level of guidance he can give you, because he's done everything from like BRRRs, flips, short-term rentals. He's a realtor. He wholesales. It's funny, we didn't even touch on his wholesaling too much during the show. We were just talking after the show, and he's doing a bunch of different stuff with that too. We didn't even realize.
And he's an Air Force pilot.
And he's an Air Force
somehow.
Yeah, which he does full time, like along with everything else. So he's definitely a busy guy. So you should definitely reach out to him. And if you are in the Pensacola area, he also runs a Pines of Properties meetup down there that I'm sure you can get a ton of value from attending.
Head to that for sure.
Yep. So anyways, guys, we appreciate you all listening. Please go and leave us a 5-star review wherever you listen to your podcast. You should also go to collectingkeyspodcast.com/free and you get your free 5-step guide to start generating off-market leads so that you can also have a million businesses just like Caleb does. No, but realistically, just pick one. Just find leads and make money.
Exactly.
It's a simpler lifestyle. Anyways, guys, enjoy this episode with Caleb Drake. All right. We are here today with Caleb Drake. And man, I'm super excited to have you on the show. We got to have a good little pre-show conversation. And you are kind of like the epitome of a real estate entrepreneur, man. So I'm super excited to hear about everything that you have going on. I guess for like the quick 5-second view to give everyone a preview, you have a very successful real estate team. You have a short-term rental company. You're doing fix and flips. You run a local meetup. You have, what else you have? You have like some general rentals. You're just doing stuff all over the place. You're doing things virtually as well as in your own market. You're all over the place, man. So I'm super, super excited to dive in. So for people who may have not heard of you before, give us the rundown, kind of where you came from, how you got into real estate, and who exactly is Caleb Drake?
Yeah, so I originally from the Midwest, Terre Haute, Indiana, kind of a small college town. Left there when I was 18, joined the military, and then went back to school. And when I was back home, I kind of noticed like that there was a lot of rental properties that were really crappy. And so that kind of will kind of transition into that later. But military officer, full-time real estate agent as well, full-time real estate investor. We've run a management company of about 20 assets for short-term rentals. And then we've got about 12 long-term rentals as well.
Nice. There we go. Perfect. So you went into the military route. And then what sort of led you into real estate after that? Was it, you know, family thing? Was it just like you, when you got out of the military, you're like, I don't want to do anything like really in general, and real estate's what every burnout goes into. Like, well, what sort of was that transition?
Yeah, so I had a kind of a pretty successful uncle. I come from a very blue collar family, but you know, I had that uncle. Everybody has that rich uncle, or everybody wants, right? And he was investing in real estate. Fun fact, I actually bought a house that he owned like 30 years ago.
Yes.
Oh, really? That's funny.
Like 30 years later as a rental of my own. But yeah, so I saw his, kind of what he did is successful. And then it all actually came about when I bought my first house on a VA loan and I was in special operations. So I was deployed 6 months of the year. So I took and while I was deployed, I rented my house out on Airbnb. And I took the money from that, found a partner. It was a good friend of mine from college. And who was also a military officer. And we took that money and we bought another Airbnb. Took that money and then we just kind of continued to scale there. We bought a couple of multifamilies in the Midwest, another short term that we burned out, and we're in the process of burning out another log cabin on a Smith Lake in Alabama. And we just kind of grew that way. And then from there, I got my real estate license in 2020 and I kind of started to scale that way, selling rentals, using all the active income I was making to buy more passive rentals. And then I took and realized that I needed to kind of start a team in the Midwest to be able to scale. And so we did that. And then as a real estate agent, I was kind of tired of referring out all of my short-term rental. I'm in a short-term rental market in Pensacola, Florida. So I would get clients and want to buy short-terms. And then they would be like, you know, who's your property manager? So I got tired of referring that out. And so I just created a property management short-term rental co-hosting company as well. With a buddy of mine, Ben, and we got 20 assets that we manage between the team. And I think that is going to continue to grow. Hopefully by next year, we'll be having this conversation. We'll be like at 40. It's kind of the goal of 40 assets under management.
What's the work that it takes to do 20 Airbnbs, right? Because I have no context. Like for long-term rentals, 100 units is kind of like a benchmark for a lot of property managers, but I have no idea what that means for short-term rentals.
Short-term management, it really doesn't make sense in my opinion for like anything under 10 to 15 because of the amount of work that you have to do to create the team, right? With hiring virtual assistants to do your customer outreach, like your client outreach, creating the team of cleaners. And if you're going in multiple markets, like setting that up in multiple markets, I would say right now with the systems that we have in place, we're probably dedicating 10 to 15 hours a week for the 20 units just because we're trying to optimize a few of those listings. Hopefully by, you know, this time next year, we'll be at about 5 hours a week with our VAs, kind of managing everything. But that this is a kind of a newer venture of mine. So it's only been like 3 months that we've built this company up from, you know, 0 units to 20. And so taking that and, you know, training the VAs and trying to manage like the units while training the virtual assistants, while kind of setting up some of those systems. It's been a little more demanding, but I would say probably 10 to 15 hours a week as of right now that we're just dedicating to the short-term rental company.
Yeah. And so like, what kind of money can you even make doing that? We charge, what, 20% gross top line? I think that's what we've seen as common from what people around here anyway.
Yeah. So since we're more of a co-hosting platform, we're just kind of doing the guest outreach, the cleaner coordination, some of the scheduled maintenance and some of the deferred maintenance and any kind of, you know, like emergencies that come up. We have a tier system where it's, you know, the lower tier is 10%, the middle tier is about 15%, which is probably your best value. And then there's an upcharge for a few things at 18%. Since we don't handle the money, you don't have to have a specific license in Florida to do so. So that keeps us a little bit less on the overhead. We don't have to necessarily, you know, have extra people to manage like accountants and stuff like that to manage the money. We invoice out monthly for our charges. And that keeps us legal in the state of Florida because if you manage properties in Florida, you require a broker license.
Hmm. Oh, really? Interesting. I guess like Washington State too.
Yeah, we're like that too.
I just assume that Florida being Republican state, they'd be more like open to that. I know like Idaho is kind of like that. And same with like Texas. I think you don't need to be brokered. You can just like...
Idaho's like, do what you want.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah.
Pretty sure Alabama's pretty similar to that in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But Florida's a little more... They have a little more regulation due, I think, a lot to because it's such a short-term market and it's such a, you know, rental market down here.
Yeah. There's lots of old people too. You got to have more rules than the old people because otherwise people just come and like take advantage of all of them.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah, they say Florida's where America goes to die.
Yeah,
it
for sure.
It definitely is. So with a couple of those, I just want to ask a couple more points on that just for my edification. Do you guys then like just have to upcharge your like cleaning fees and stuff like that? Like, I'm curious because like, I just think about the business side of things and the business model around this. And like, if you, and Mike and I own a couple of Airbnbs and we manage them ourselves for a bit, and I was not good at it, didn't like it. So if you're going to hire a separate cleaner, they're going to be building in their profit margin. So do you guys do the same thing, right? You can hire it in and that profit margin goes to you and then you get the management fee, or are you guys trying to do everything at cost? Because I know there's a few different ways you could do this.
Yeah, the nice thing about the way that we've got it is the cleaners manage, like they're not on our payroll.
Okay.
So they invoice the sellers directly.
Gotcha.
So then the sellers get a weekly invoice from the cleaners. We always agree, like we always promote out our cleaners with, hey, you're going to get paid on Fridays.
Mm-hmm.
So send the invoice on Fridays, you'll get paid Friday or Saturday by our owners. Make sure the owners know that, like we want to keep these cleaners happy. And
yeah.
So you're going to pay them when you get the invoice. Some are like, yeah, I'll pay them next week. No, you're going to pay them now.
Mm-hmm.
And then we always send our invoices just monthly. And so they get a monthly invoice for us. And so that keeps kind of the amount of emails and the amount of invoices, you know, down. And then the VAs, if we have any, like my personal properties that we manage, my VAs pay my cleaners directly through. We just kind of use a WhatsApp chat and we're like, hey, we did, you know, 4 cleanings this week. Here's the numbers. I just kind of put a check mark, like a thumbs up on the chat, and then they kind of handle all of that.
So as like a short-term management company like that, what is your like value proposition compared to your competitors to have people decide to work with you? You know, it's like with a long-term property manager, they all kind of like race the bottom on price. And then, you know, there'll be ones that are like, you know, 8% instead of 10%, but then where they try to get you, it's with like lease-up fees and all these other things, right? But with yours, I feel like you have a lot more flexibility. So how do you, like for someone that's trying to get into that, how do you, you know, set up that business model so you are competitive? How do you get customers? What does all that look like?
Yeah, I think me being local and having kind of a real estate investor meetup and kind of my name locally as a short-term manager guy or a short-term rental guy, I kind of had an in already with a lot of my clientele. You know, they trusted me. They knew me. You know, they say like people like to do business with people they, you know and trust. I'm not a huge social media guy. I'm not going to pretend like I'm this big social media guru or anything. But I have had people that have, you know, got to know me on social media that I've done everything from short-term management to fix and flips. Or, you know, I've got a client that I met on social media that I flipped a house for her as an agent. I managed the whole thing here and she's never been down here. We just met on social media and became friends.
That's awesome.
She's an amazing human being. But I think that the value proposition comes in my opinion, when you've got these larger companies that have, you know, 200 units and they're charging 22 to 25%. And then these hosts or these owners are getting frustrated because one, they don't have good communication. You know, they're upcharging everything. We just brought on I just had a intake call with a lady. She was like, yeah, I'm getting charged $20 here. Every time they do this, I'm getting $50 here. They have a technology fee, this and that. And we're very transparent about our costs. Like this is what you're going to pay. The only thing you're paying is that 15% on your gross or that 18% on your gross, plus the $50 technology fee. And the technology fee that we have is per cost. It's like, this is what Price Labs and, you know, Hospitable charges for us to manage this automatically and to do dynamic pricing. If you want that, you know, we're not taking it out of ours, it's just going to be this one fee, but we're not upcharging it because we don't really need to. Once you kind of have those systems in place and you've got VAs that you can pay a good rate for them, but relatively low rate for the United States, you're able to kind of outsource and train those guys up and run a business that way. Now we've got 2 VAs that we use and they're great. You know, they handle all the guest communication, any of the repair stuff that we need, et cetera. And so it's just a matter of kind of managing the managers at that point.
Right. It's a good system.
There you go. Easy enough. So basically you provide decent customer service. That's what customers actually want is what you're saying.
Yeah. Communication. Right. And I don't ever want to be the guy that has, you know, 300 units and can't get a hold, you know, and his clients can't get a hold of him. Right. I want to be a guy where like, hey, Caleb, you know, can you just drive by there today? Because one of the tenants said that the trash cans were not there. And I'm like, yeah, sure. It's, you know, I'm in the area. You know, these are, you know, most of what we do is local. We have a couple that are outside of our local area, but we got good systems in place for that. Right. But if you can build those systems with, you know, lean cost, you're able to kind of keep those costs low and you're able to pass a lot of that back to your owners.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're getting, you know, a better product for 3% less, they're going to happily stay with you, and they're going to recommend all their buddies that they know, and they're going to ensure that everybody comes over to you. And I think that our number will probably be, you know, 40 to 60 units total, I think will be where we're comfortable to be able to still provide that, like, your boutique experience versus that bigger feel of like the Casa and those larger maintenance that are in our area that, you know, evolve, that they offer, like those guys offer a low price, but then you're also kind of get what you pay for.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think there's a lot of value to be able to provide that, especially in the short term rental market, because everybody's kind of figuring that out still. Like the property management, like you said, Casa or Bacos or whatever it's called, like these big companies that are national. There's a couple other ones. And I have struggled in the past to find good quality. We have a pretty good one now here locally, managing our units for us. And so I just think that there's a great niche, especially in your market where you're at, where that is a very, like, it's probably not hard to bump into 20 short-term rentals and throw them under management. If you can provide good quality service, people are going to stick around.
Yeah. And then, you know, as an agent, I've kind of got that in where I'm a bigger pocket preferred agent. So those guys, like I'm getting short-term rental leads all the time, and I'm able to provide them the analysis on the property, you know, what our management operations would look like, and then how much. I can't guarantee somebody what they're going to make. So it's all going to be dependent on how they want to, you know, optimize their property, but I can give them a good idea. And with the experience that we have in the markets that we're in, like we know the numbers. And so I'm not in the business to lie to anybody. Right. I don't want to take on a troublesome property. So
no.
You know, I'm going to just be honest in that.
Yeah. Nice. That's awesome.
It all just came down to me. It just came down to, you know, I couldn't put my name on any of the local people. I couldn't do it. Every time I did, there was somebody that was disappointed. I'm like, well, why don't I just fix this problem and just build this? And to me, it's all about partnerships though, right? I didn't have all the answers, but the guy that I partnered with, Ben, he's in a short-term rental mastermind that I'm in. Mm-hmm. He's also a good friend of mine now, met through some of my buddies. And I'm like, Ben's like, why don't we just do this, right? And so like, yeah, sure. Like they already had three units. I had four. We took on another, you know, 11, 12. And then now we just brought on another one today. We're going to onboard next week.
See?
It's just,
nice.
Awesome. Just a matter of being honest with people. And then if it's not something that I think I can do, I'm not going to tell you I can,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then fail at it, because then that just gives me a bad name.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you're running this business, the short-term rental business. I'm curious how you're doing 9 flips as well. Like, what does that business look like?
So we've done this year, a lot of those are other owners that we're managing the remodels for.
Okay.
So I built a team of agents here, and then kind of a team in relationship to contractors. I don't have any contractors on my payroll per se, but I've got good relationships with a lot of contractors in the area. So we built a team around being able to find, specifically for like out-of-state investors, but to find a property with either on or off market with a wholesaler or on the MLS, negotiate it to where the numbers make sense, get the contractor in there during the inspection period to get the numbers right. And then we help manage that rehab, you know, picking out finishes for the owner based on the market that they're in, based on the neighborhoods that they're in. And then kind of following up with the contractors, making sure things are getting done and doing that all the way to the point where we take the listing.
Yeah.
At that point, you know, we either, if it's like a BRRRR project, we'll charge $2,500 just to manage it, make sure that we're here, that everything's getting done. If they're going to list it with us, we just take an extra percentage on the back end.
Yeah.
And so it's, you know, it's really no skin off their back because they, like I said, I've got people that have flipped houses that have never even been to Florida. So it's a good model. I built that around the fact that I was having issues because I BRRRR and flip in the Midwest, and I was having issues building that team there. And I kind of saw the struggles of being an out-of-state investor trying to start fresh. And I said, well, I can build that here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just don't flip here right now just because the numbers for me didn't make sense personally. I'm kind of like a, you know, buy with cash and use private money to flip. And here the numbers are, you know, 150, 200, where I'm at in the Midwest, they're, you know, 25 to 70,
right,
depending on the deal, right? And so that's a lot easier to swallow if you make a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
So,
all right.
So I've been doing that. And that's, and the rental numbers for me on the properties I'm keeping are just better in the Midwest because insurance is a lot lower.
Yeah. I know the insurance situation in Florida, I've heard, has been just gotten out of control.
I could do a whole podcast on it.
No, so that's cool. So let's talk about your agent team. So you built out your agent team, and you said that, I guess at the beginning, you say they're investor agents specifically. So you focus on working with investors.
Yep. So I started out kind of at a small local brokerage of like, literally I was the only guy under like 55, and I was the only guy, and I was the only person under 55. It was a bunch of older ladies, and they were kind of like, I had six grandmas, right? I could ask them anything.
Yeah,
amazing people, but I couldn't scale there. And so, and my mentor that was one of the ladies, she was like, you'll outgrow this in a year or two. And, but, you know, get your license, come over here. And so I did, and I did outgrow them. They're still great friends. I still stop in the brokerage, but I joined Five Pillars team, and, you know, the EXP model, obviously the downline makes you money. But wasn't really my initial like plan was to create this, you know, massive downline for passive income or anything. It was more, like I said, I'm active duty military and I needed people to help me build it out because I just didn't have the time. And so I first brought on a friend of mine, Chip, and it was kind of like, instead of Five Pillars team at that point, it was kind of like the Five Pillars duo. And so it was like Chip and I'd pull in the client, we'd run the number, Chip would show the house while I was, you know, serving in the military at work. And we'd put the house under contract and we just split. And we probably did that 20 times, you know, 2021, 2022, like that, you know, that crazy time frame of investor frenzy. We probably did that 20, 30 times just in that time frame. And then I brought a couple other people on through my Pints and Properties real estate meetup. Some people were like, oh, you know, you're an agent. So they built up and we had like five or six OGs on the team. And then my buddy Chris came over and kind of brought his downline, and we formed like a new group. And we've got about 15 agents now, if you look, that are all part of our group, the Be More group here in Pensacola. 8 to 9 of them are investors or want to be investors. We've got a full-time flipper on the team. We had a girl that was the CFO of a multi-million dollar company. She's now doing real estate full-time, and she's managing, I think, 3 or 4 flips from one of our buyers, like currently,
yes,
that are all going to go. And she's doing a couple of her own flips as well. And they're all going to go live around the same time. So that was kind of my pain point was time and being able to build out people that I trust that I can throw these leads to that, it's every agent wish they had that problem, right? I had too many leads and not enough time to work them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just kind of built a team around that and then just kind of, you know, lead gen and farm those types of buyers. I do work a lot of military and a lot of residential now as well. But I think at our core, we're still an investor type of a group.
Right.
Yeah.
Does that take like a lot of effort? I mean, you kind of gave us the story to how that team was built. Once it's there and established, like you have it, obviously it's always going to be growing in a living organism. But like, is that a lot of effort to grow that and like manage it once you have the people? Or is being part of Five Pillars and EXP kind of like help shape that box? So I just think about all the other stuff you have going on. Like, how can you take that workload on? Because it seems, I said, kind of a big endeavor.
Yeah, it was a lot. I wanted to get 5 agents in 5 years was kind of my goal. And I did. I think we brought on 8 in 11 months or 10 in 11 months, something like that. I look back. And so I didn't have any good systems in place. And so that's when I kind of had to start hiring out. You know, we brought a transaction coordinator on to kind of handle some of the transaction stuff. I brought in a full-time VA to handle a lot of things in my businesses, but also to kind of help manage and pull comps for any kind of investor properties that we're looking at, any kind of wholesale deals, to kind of take on some of that admin. And then I brought on another really experienced agent, like I said, a minute ago, my friend Chris, who is crushing it in the residential market. And so we kind of just formed the team together to help with the training. So if I'm bringing somebody on my downline, he'll be their mentor and then vice versa. And so, you know, we can throw leads and all of that to the person and then train them up. So if somebody wants to be an investor agent, they'll come over under me as a mentor. If somebody wants to, you know, be more residential, then they'll go to Chris. But it's really, to me, everything has been about partnerships and just creating those relationships because just my time is so packed with the military.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's funny, I guess I overlooked the fact that you were still active duty as well. It's funny, we talk to a lot of guys that are like ex-military, right? That have gotten out of that. So I guess that's like a full-time job for you doing that here locally. So you're doing all of this on the side outside of your W-2, basically at the military. Do you have plans to like leave the military and make that, like make real estate your full-time thing? Or are you going to continue to just run this as basically your side gig and be a career military?
Man, I wish it was a side gig, but they're full-time jobs. But
yeah.
I've got about 4.5, less than 5 years left until I can retire from the military.
Mm-hmm.
if you would have asked me this question about a year ago, I would have said, I'm probably going to go on the reserves and do my time and then come back. That was when I was kind of vulnerable to like a PCS or, you know, like a military move out of the area. And I wasn't going to leave the businesses. I do better in some of my businesses than I do with my military income. The benefits are what are keeping me here. Like, you know, we built a house on the water here in Pensacola or Gulf Breeze technically, but that was a big expense that if I didn't have that, then I would have probably got out and went in the reserves. Mm-hmm. But I also got orders from one base, Hurlburt Field, over to NAS Pensacola, where I built my house like almost literally right in the middle of the two with the expectation that if I did get orders in Pensacola, I would stay in. And so that's why I started to kind of hire more VAs and try to build partnerships versus doing everything on my own, because, you know, half of something is better than, you know, 0 or 100% of nothing, right?
Yep.
So I'm totally fine with creating these relationships with people to build these teams and these partners and to bring the value that I have, but also some of the limiting factors that I have of like on our short-term rental management company. Ben is so much better when it comes to the operation side of things, where I'm good with client outreach and all of that. So he kind of manages that stuff. I manage client outreach. I do the investors. I bring in anybody that wants to rent with us. And then he kind of handles operation, training the VA and keeping all of that. And so it comes down to this, you know, knowing what you're capable of. And then I have pushed myself beyond where I should be many a times. I do probably times a week. Well, I just like, have you slept? And I'm like, fun, sleep.
That's perfect. Yeah, so that sounds like pretty a partnership. Did you guys establish those roles and responsibilities beforehand, or did that just kind of like come together as the business is built?
No, with the short-term rental partnership, the co-hosting company, we established those prior to ever doing it. I've got, you know, my partner Josh on some of our like my initial deals. We never really established anything. We just kind of went at it. We didn't know what we were doing. You know, we got lucky that we started doing short-term rentals in 2018, where there wasn't a lot of competition, but we never really had those roles. And the book Traction was really kind of pivotal to me, like being able to kind of take what I didn't know, like on how to manage businesses and how to kind of use that. Like if you're familiar with the book Traction, like the VI construct, you know, the visionary integrator construct, I'm very much a visionary, but when it comes to integration, I'm like, I just suck at it. To almost like a fault where I'm like, yeah, I'll keep trying to build these businesses, but then I'm like, I don't really like the admin, you know, shit blows. And so it was nice to find those partnerships that make sense, and building those, the foundations that we built on the last kind of two partnerships that I've done have been built around the mistakes that I made in the beginning. And luckily Josh and I are really good friends. You know, my original kind of partner on our short-term rentals. So we kind of figured it out, you know, like, hey, you're good at this, I'm good at this, let's figure it out. But it was definitely over time. And for newer guys, like if you are getting into partnerships, establish those roles early, because you can lose friends or you can lose partners just based on miscommunications, right?
Yeah.
Like, hey, I thought you were going to do X, Y, Z. And it's like, no, dude, I never said that. And then you can go down this rabbit hole of like, you know, I feel slighted because, you know, I'm doing 75% of the work and 50% of the pay. So there's just things that I think that going into partnerships, having, like you said, that foundation, kind of those roles and responsibilities before you ever sign that LLC together, like just have that figured out, and it just makes your life so much better.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you don't want to hate your partner over that. Mike and I did not do any of that, but somehow we're still here. But we've had to figure all that stuff out. Honestly, as we've gone though, and I would not recommend doing it the way we did it.
Yeah. I mean, we seem to be an anomaly. Everyone always asks about our partnership and how it came together. I don't know. We almost like accidentally set expectations and standards when we started, but you know, should definitely do it more officially most of the time.
Yeah. When I coach people on that, because I was actually just talking to somebody else about this, like, well, what do I do? And I'm like, just explain, just like you said, Caleb, like explain in detail who is going to do what. And who's bringing what and what you get from that when you're kind of come together in a venture, a joint venture or a business. And those things can change. Those things can adapt. But if you don't at least line it out, like in being like open and honest about your goals and your visions up front too, because if those are misaligned, then everything's going to be a problem for you. If you're running a business together and somebody's trying to go left and the other person's trying to go right, it's never going to succeed. And if that's the case, don't be in a partnership. Go with a short-term joint venture on a specific deal.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. I've got, with our fix and flip stuff and our bird deals in Indiana, I brought in a partner recently that was originally just going to be a private money investor of mine. He's a really good friend of mine, had a bunch of capital sitting for the Midwest. Like, I was needing $50,000 per deal. And so originally I was just giving him 12% on his money. And we had a deal where it looked like if we sold it, you know, we were going to be kind of in that weird market where it was starting to die. And I was like, you know what, like, how about we keep this deal? I'll manage, you know, all of the rehab. If we leave any money in it after the burr, if you leave that money in it, I'll split the deal with you 50-50. You know, no money into the deal, all the work. He's a few thousand dollars into it after, you know, the burr. So it just wasn't perfect. The gurus can tell you that they're all perfect. They're not. You know, you may leave a few thousand dollars in them. And right now, banks are requiring us to leave about 10% loan to cost in these deals just because the feds are tightening. And so as he leaves, you know, that 10% in these deals, he's growing his portfolio. I'm doing all the work and he's almost like a passive investor. But we went into that. Like, he's like, dude, I don't have the time to help with this. Like, if you can manage this stuff, then I'll do that. And that was something we agreed on from the beginning. And so now, like, we have like a every 2 or 3 weeks call and he's like, hey man, we go, where are we at? What do we own now? And I'm like, oh, we own these three. And this one's in the middle of a remodel. He's like, so where's my money? And I'm like, oh, like, not in like that kind of way, but he's like, where are we at? Why are we using it? And I'm like, oh, you're probably 2 weeks out from that being back. And he's like, okay, cool, man. Like, let me know if you need anything.
That's a great partnership.
Yeah, because there's trust, right? He knows that I had one that I told him what I thought it was going to comp out at, and it comped out $10,000 less. And we were going to be leaving a lot of his money in it. And I was like, dude, it's my bad. I honestly, we could have fought the appraisal, but I was like, we're in the time crunch. Like, I'll just leave. You know, we're leaving 15 in it. I'll leave five. You leave the 10 that we planned on, and we'll just split it 50-50 that way. You know, and I've got the capital to kind of make those decisions in that way. I'm not stretching myself thin on that stuff. So, and everybody's happy. We're cash flowing. We've got a 50% appreciation in that property, forced appreciation. So it's a good deal.
Awesome. Yeah. Yeah. That's good stuff. Very cool. So you got a lot going on actively right now. What does the future hold for you? Are there any of these different endeavors that you want to focus on? Or are you just going to keep riding out with how things are, trying to optimize? What are your plans?
No, my wife's 3 months pregnant, so things are going to change probably pretty drastically. So I've got a 14-year-old, but she wanted, it's her first. Okay. It was a previous relationship, but she wanted to have a baby. And so we are May timeframe, that's going to happen. That baby's going to be born. Life's going to change. The office I'm sitting in right now is going to be a nursery. So I think things will change. Not naive to say they won't, but the goal next year is to bring on 20 long-term rentals and then grow the property management company. I'm planning on 8 of those being, we've got 3 acres of land in Indiana that are zoned up to 11 units and they only have 3 on them. So the goal is to build 8, you know, 2 quadplexes on that land. And then just get 12 single families or a couple of multifamilies where we're at, just to get to that goal. That's kind of the number that I need to get to where I know that when I retire from the military, that I won't have to change my lifestyle and I won't have to do anything else to keep the income that I have. And that's kind of important to me. I'm not a big like financial independence per se guy. Like, I'm not the guy that's got a goal to sit in my house. I would go insane. I want to continue flipping houses. I want to continue working as an agent. I want to continue building these businesses, but I also want to be able to make some riskier decisions and have that passive income to do so, right? To be able to scale. I'd like to learn commercial multifamily. As an agent, I've got a 20 unit deal under contract for an investor right now. And I'm kind of seeing the way that those numbers work. And I'm like, you know, this is probably where I will end up, you know, down the road. But that's so foreign to me right now that if I just focused on that, I would put all this stuff would have to be put aside. So I need to get the 2024 Caleb is just going to be tried to get everything on autopilot. And I've got the good systems built to, you know, to do the fix and flips and the bird deals in the Midwest. We're sending out the mailers. We're making the intake calls. We're doing the wholesale deals. If we can't take it down, I can buy a lot on the MLS up there as well. With cash, there's a lot of easy deals and foreclosures that you can buy. And so I've got the contractors. We just doubled the amount of contractors we have. They can now take 2 on at a time instead of just 1. they're working, you know, solely for me, this contractor, and I have created a relationship that I promise that I'll get him a deal. You know, I bought a couple deals a little bit, not at the best numbers, just to make sure that I didn't lose those contractors. You know, I can leave a couple $1,000s in to make sure that those guys are eating so that they're not going out and finding other work and forgetting about, you know, the deals that I'm bringing. And so keeping that train moving and just kind of those deals coming in and those flips and remodels, they're mostly Burr deals right now because I'm trying to just build a portfolio, but building that portfolio with those Burr deals and then picking up, we've got a short-term rental. I'm kind of transitioning a little bit. We've got a short-term rental on Smith Lake in Alabama that we're in the middle of a remodel on. And the plan is to build like 5 geodesic domes on the rest of the land. And so that'll build up the rental portfolio there. And then we'll kick those off onto the management team. And so that's 2024 is probably more development and then sit back and be a new dad again.
Awesome. Good stuff.
Yeah.
Well, great. Well, awesome, Caleb. It's cool to hear all you have going on and you're keeping it balanced very well too, it sounds like. So cool. So we're coming up on time. So we're going to dive into our end of show questions here. So we ask the same 3 questions to every guest that comes on the show. So the first question is, what is your craziest real estate story? This can be a big win, a big loss, crazy tenant, you know, crazy seller, whatever you got.
Yeah. So we, kind of thinking about from the short-term management side, this was a property that I own personally. And we had our cleaner had to take some time off. She had a death in the family. And so we brought in a new cleaner for that week or, you know, that couple weeks. And literally like the third time this poor lady's cleaned our house, she opens up one of the drawers and there's like a loaded 9mm gun. It's like sitting in the drawer.
Oh my God.
And so we get like, she like sends me a picture and it's just like, you know, I just see like my phone says like, you know, image sent or whatever. I don't see the picture. And so I look at it a couple minutes later. And it's like, is this normal? It's like, you know, this is just like loaded Glock. And I'm like, no. And so at that point, I did not really have any idea what to do in any situation. I mean, if a guest leaves a shirt, it's like, cool, we'll ship it to you. If it's that important, we'll put it in the cleaner's closet with it, you know, if you're local, whatever. But this was like a gun. Like, we don't know if this gun was from a crime. You know, this gun is just, you know, a guy that carries, like you can, you know, carry in the state of Florida now if you breathe, you know, you don't need a permit or anything. And so we call the cops and like, you know, just to see what they say. And in the process of getting a hold of the sheriff's office and them getting somebody over there, you know, the lady calls me and she's like, yeah, we left our gun, whatever. I'm like, you know, we tell her and she's like, that's fine. Like, you can call the police. It's registered in our name. And she sends me a copy of, you know, her gun permit. It was our, you know, our husband's gun permit or whatever, but sends us a copy of the gun permit. She's like, you know, we're registered gun owners. Like, we are legally allowed to have one. I'm like, that's fine. Go pick it up.
Yeah.
Like, but it was at that point, it's like, there's so many things that are going through your mind. So it was an easy outcome. You know, we just kind of sorted it out, but I definitely was like, didn't know where to go with it. You know, I'm like,
yeah,
I'm an hour and a half away.
Right.
Yeah. So they'd vacated the property at that point. And that's why the cleaner found it. So they like left it there.
Yeah.
That's kind of fucked actually, if you think about it. Cause like, what if the next people that come are like a family with kids?
Right.
Yeah. And they're like going through and like they find a gun in there. Yeah.
You got to have a little bit more, you know, care for your weapon. But one thing I am thinking is like, you could have easily had a good throwaway gun, Caleb. Just saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, right. You never know.
Could have been a millionaire, right? I'm going to Vegas tomorrow. Like, I could have been like that cop that robbed those 9 casinos or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Dude. That's funny. A bad situation. No, that's crazy to think about. Like, I don't know what I would do. I guess I don't even know if I would have thought about calling the cops right away. I would have just been like, kind of like, oh shit, there's a freaking gun in my house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like, and then stuff when it's like, don't touch it because now your fingerprints are on it. Like,
yeah. You never
was involved in a crime. She just kind of like a newborn baby, right? You're just sitting there looking at her like, what do we do? Like, what are we doing?
So, right? Yeah, no, that's a good one. All right. Second question. What is the number one tip you would give to a small time real estate operator looking to take their business to the next level?
Yeah, I would say first, I don't get any kickbacks from this, but the book Traction changed kind of the way that I thought about real estate. And then I never got through the whole book because I had already kind of started implementing the strategies, but the 4-hour work week was another one that was kind of, I had already started bringing VAs into my business and hiring out. So that's probably the theme that I would go with for somebody wanting to scale is hire out the things that aren't making you a ton of money. As a real estate agent, I hire out all of my admin. As a small business owner, I hire out my admin and like running comps. Like, I could spend hours a day running comps on properties, but I can pay someone $7 an hour to do that so that my $300 an hour income isn't wasted on that. You know, figure out the number that you're making per hour and then start figuring out how you can take that, you know, if you're working 60 hours, how you can take that 60 hours and make it 40 hours for the cheapest way possible or the most effective way, right? Like the cheapest way might not be the most effective. I have found that hiring virtual assistants and using virtual assistants, as long as you train them, is going to help you scale and help you kind of build your business and take that workload off of you. So dive into what you're doing, figure out exactly where you need to scale or what you need to scale, and then start hiring.
Yeah, there you go. Easy enough. I like it. Yeah. Heck yeah, dude. That's great. I like it from a business owner approach too, right? I mean, you have, that's some really good skill set stuff that you can apply to actually scaling your real estate business.
Yeah. And pro tip, if you start.
Yeah, treat it like a business, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like I treated real estate like a hobby for probably 5 years. And like, if you would have asked me in 2020, like what we were making in our short-term rental company, I had no clue because we were just using any money we were making, we were dumping back into the company. We didn't go, I mean, I still don't really abide by like the profit first, no mantra, but like we weren't keeping any money back for ourselves. We were continually scaling. We were wasting money on, you know, anything. Like I spent $10,000 last year on cold callers and never got a deal just because I saw some guru on Instagram that was like, oh, this will be great, right? Because I didn't have time to train them. Yeah. I wasn't using the effectively. I thought it was a turnkey process. Like, you know, I didn't treat things like a business. I just had a ton of this disposable income coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And I could have probably 10x that money if I would have, you know, just done it the right way.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And pro tip, if you start reading Traction, you're like, this is really freaking boring, just hire someone to read it and do it for you. That's what Dan and I did.
We did do that.
Awesome. All right. Last question, Caleb. Where can people find you, follow you, and reach out to you?
Yeah. So you can find me on Instagram personally as Drake, which is my last name, Drake_OH, Draco. It's kind of a play on the airplane I used to fly for special operations, E-28 Draco. And then if you want to find the real estate company, like our real estate sales, our realtor team, that's BeMoreGroup_ on Instagram. So you can find us there. You can reach out to any of us on there. Probably the best way to get a hold of us.
Right on.
Easy enough. Right on. Well, thanks so much, Caleb. We really appreciate you coming on and congrats on all you have going on. And I'm excited to hear what the next little bit goes for you as well, because you got a lot of momentum, it sounds like. Right on, guys. Well, if you are in the Pensacola area or you like what Caleb has going on, definitely reach out to him on Instagram. People come onto these shows so that they get in front of other people and they do want you to engage them, believe it or not. Otherwise, he could have just been like, nah, I don't want to go on the show. I'm just going to sit at home. So don't be shy. But along the same lines, we appreciate you all and you should leave us a 5-star review. We're able to listen to your show. We really appreciate that. And I'll see you guys next week.
Thanks for listening to Collecting Keys. Drop us a 5-star review on iTunes and send us a screenshot to mike@collectingkeys.com for your chance to receive a free Collecting Keys t-shirt.